Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Okay, so Labor Day has us a little bit behind this week because we had to do a game order as well as our usual comics order. So this is going to be sort of a quick, fast podcast.
By which we mean it'll be like merely an hour.
Right, exactly.
Not a bloated hour and a half.
Exactly.
Where at the end of it you're like, I wish I could die. Just...
Wow.
I don't know.
I'm kind of dark, Dave.
That's what I'm guessing.
That's how everyone just, listens?
Yeah.
Oh my God, just kill me.
So we're just going to go through news real quick, and then we'll jump into comics.
Yep.
So first of all, I just want to mention that the Pokemon gym badges have hit the store.
Yes.
They are super cool.
I was going to say, they're probably the swankiest badges you've ever seen.
They're really cool. I actually like them a lot.
They got a slide picture of our mascot, Maximilian Larch, the store rogue.
Yep. In that it's sort of based on his look a little bit.
Yep.
But, yeah, you can pick those up. They are $8 or $7 if you have a Pokemon occupying the gym.
Yep. I had somebody do that just yesterday.
Ah, okay.
It was a total takeover.
If you do have a Pokemon in the gym, make sure you show us.
Yes. Although, as our former staffer Amanda joked, if you're Team Mystic, it's $20. Not Team Mystic. Team Instinct.
I was going to say, we're Instinct. Team Mystic.
Team
Why
Instinct.
Are we charging more
yes.
for our
She said if you're Team Instinct, it's $20.
Randy's just engaged in psychological warfare.
That's right. No.
They were trying to take the gym, too. She was in the other day, and but there was actually a glitch that day. And I saw it where when you're trying to get in, when you're, like, hit go on the fight, it, like, just backed you out or something.
Huh.
So, anyway, they tried.
Pokemon Go doesn't have glitches. I don't know what you're talking
Pokemon
about.
Pokemon Stop.
Yeah. Anyway, they're super cool. They're sort of based on our Maximilian Larch design. They were done for us by Nakatomi Inc., who do some of the prints and stuff. It says Rogues Gallery on the back, so even if you're not playing Pokemon, they're cool little pins.
Absolutely. And if you get like a bunch of them, you could look like an admiral if
That's
you put them on.
That's true. It's a good point, Dave.
Interesting. I
thought.
All right. September. We've got, coming up on Saturday, September 10th, we're doing our X-Wing Minis night again. And last time we had a few people out, and they brought a ton of ships, so even if you don't have the game, I imagine you can come out and play no problem.
Yeah, honestly, I know some of the people who are coming, and they have a cornucopia of all the different ships and factions, so...
I believe the baseline they're looking at is like 100 points to play, but like we imagine we could accommodate up to like 300 points.
Yep.
I think more or less what I'm saying, if you've ever had an inkling to play X-Wing...
Come out, there will be ships.
There will be ships, and you can sit down and play and have fun, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Yep. And I would also say, even if that inkling is just kind of a, I just kind of want to see what this game looks like in action, the ships look so cool, so just seeing them in action, seeing what people can do with them, you know, how you build up, you know, a ship with, like, adding droids in and proton torpedoes and all that cool stuff.
Yep. Also, we did just move our X-Wing stuff up to the front to give us some breathing room. So if you come in the store, Munchkin is now at the back. Games Workshop has been completely overhauled to be a lot more clean. Nick did a lot of work on that. And then we moved the Star Wars stuff, except for the RPGs, which is, there's no room for. It's with the RPGs, but X-Wing, all that stuff is up at the front now.
Yep.
All right. Then we've got Batman Day on September 17th. That will start at 10 a.m. if you want to get here bright and early. You can get a free Batman number one, and we'll have 15% off sale on everything Batman that day. However, from noon to 3 p.m., we are going to have Batman and Catwoman themselves in attendance, so you can come out and get your picture taken, bring your kids, have their picture taken with them. And then we will also have artist Devin Kraft is going to be coming down. He will have probably some prints and stuff for sale. His prints are really awesome, probably maybe his Overwatch prints.
Yeah.
But he will also be doing Batman-related quick sketches for people that day.
Randy, I forget. Is that date, is that on a new comic day or a Saturday?
Saturday.
Okay.
This is Saturday, September 17th. And then later that night, Saturday, September 17th, will be Smash Up, our Gaming with Rogues. Come out and play the card game where you have a mix of various things, ninjas, wizards, dinosaurs, time travelers, and you battle each other for bases.
So what you're saying is our store will be a bumpin' house party that day.
It will. And then that next Sunday, September 25th, is our Magic the Gathering Kaladesh pre-release. And we are taking sign-ups for that right now. All right, so news. There's not a ton. And it's all TV news. Because the fall season's starting in a couple weeks. Yep. The stuff's starting to trickle out. One thing I want to mention, I don't know if you guys both saw the picture, but we have had our first look at the Ghost Rider on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
Gabriel Luna is playing him.
I don't know if I actually saw the picture. What's it look like?
He's got the classic Johnny Blaze shirt, right?
It's a little bit tweaked. It's not quite Johnny Blaze. I mean,
well, Blaze had like a jumpsuit, like kind of like.
But you know the shirt I'm talking about, right? It's like blue. It's got like a little square, like a light blue square on it. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah, it looked. I mean, it's
Robbie Reyes. Yeah,
and he had sort of the same kind of design, a little bit tweaked on his black kind of outfit. So I mean, it looked close to what Robbie Reyes is supposed to look like.
One of my friends, a friend of the store, Chris Maka, mentioned, he posted a thing.
I saw this.
He posted saying that he's like, Ghost Rider, if he's not on a horse or a bike, he's lame.
Yeah.
And I responded, nah, man, Fiery Muscle Car. Yeah. Fiery Muscle Car is cool. Which led to the best discussion ever of all the different things Ghost Rider could ride. One of our friends suggested that Steampunk Ghost Rider, in fact, I believe that was a friend of the store, Jason Durall, our man in Germany, suggested that Steampunk Ghost Rider rode a velocipede.
Yes.
And I suggested that I'd like to see he should get on board a locomotive.
A hellish locomotive would be one of those metal things you could get.
Exactly.
I want to be very on the nose. Can he ride a fire truck?
Oh, I like it.
Interesting.
Someone else suggested a Segway, and then someone posted a picture of that, and that was fantastic.
Okay, the Segway.
No, he's like it's Ghost Rider OB, and it's be Job the Ghost Rider. I think it'd be perfect.
If there's that.
How about one of those like airplane staircase cars?
Yes.
Speaking of
stress development,
But also, by the way, I want to suggest a dragster.
Yeah.
A fiery dragster that's incinerating the road behind it. What Chris said, I do get that to a degree. I mean, like, the quintessential Ghost Rider is that weird 70s mashup of occultism and stunt bike stuff.
I agree. I get where he's coming from. I just thought it was a fun discussion.
I actually like the old West Ghost Rider, too, so.
Nice crap.
Very well, Dave.
I don't know anything. What's the deal with the Old West Ghost Rider?
I mean, I don't know backstory. I just
It's a Ghost Rider from the Old West who rides a horse.
He's got like a white costume, right?
Yeah, I don't know, man. He just rides a horse.
In the movies, he's played by Sam Elliott. So what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, in the comics, he actually did nothing to do with Ghost Rider, like Zarathos and all that stuff.
Right.
He was called the Ghost Rider. It was like an original character before Ghost Rider was created.
Yeah.
And he was a guy who wore a white suit. He had supposedly died just like the Lone Ranger and came back to life. And so, because back in those days, they couldn't tell when you were just unconscious. So like, he must have died. And like, I guess so, whatever.
He just fell off your horse.
And then they changed his name to the Knight Rider in the 70s because, not K-N, but N, right. Knight Rider. And then after Ghost Rider went out of favor and before he came back in the 90s, they were calling him Ghost Rider again in the 80s. So yeah, now I don't even know what the deal is with him.
It does look pretty cool. I remember the old Marvel Universe entry.
So
just real quick, y'all think, is Robbie Reyes going to be cool?
No, it's not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's going to be terrible.
All right, just checking.
I mean, yeah, I agree with her.
I would love to be wrong.
Like Fiery Muscle Car, it's cool. Yeah, the show's going to suck.
I feel like it's wasted on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ghost Rider mythology would have been better on a Netflix show.
I agree. However, we may at some point get a flaming Quinjet, and that'd be awesome.
For like 5 seconds. I would rather take 13 episodes.
They're going to use their whole budget?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just saying, if Robbie Reyes is like their pilot and whatever vehicle they use becomes like a fiery Ghost Rider car, it's kind of fun. It's gonna be terrible. I'm aware it's gonna be terrible.
A character to make him a pilot.
Yes,
anyway,
it is.
I'm gonna throw out one more weird vehicle here. Hot air balloon. What happens with that? Oh yeah, well,
what about a unicycle?
How about Dad Boy? if someone doesn't have that mashup somewhere on there, and I'll be very surprised. The Dad Boy and Ghost Rider. all right, The Legend of Tomorrow trailer came out. Speaking of disappointing shows, and Stargirl's in it.
Yeah,
that's kind
of
cool.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah. I was less disappointed in this season overall than I think you guys were.
Fell off it, but what I had watched, I had enjoyed. I think I got a little superhero TV'd out. Honestly,
yeah,
that happens.
But I'll probably catch up at some point.
I'm still gonna watch because they're doing Justice Society.
I know, because we've already got what Our Man and now Stargirl.
Yeah,
I think they've talked Commander Steel, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's right. Here's the funny thing. Wasn't Stargirl already in Smallville? Like, full costume Stargirl?
Yeah, she was.
So it's not like a groundbreaking thing. They probably just dragged out the old costume.
Well, hopefully they updated it a little bit.
But I think that's interesting that she's going to be on it, which is kind of cool. And then Greg Berlanti teased, this is very early news, we don't usually cover it, but it's kind of cool, that Black Lightning is in development for his own series.
I think that could be really good.
I agree.
You know, Black Lightning is actually a character who's he's always been a little bit of a sort of a B-list, C-list guy at DC. Yeah. I actually like him in most of his appearances. He's one of those characters that has a pretty strong presence. I think if they do for him something of what they did for Flash by giving him some strong supporting players to kind of to key off of, he could be awesome.
Well, during the 90s, wasn't he, or maybe early 2000s actually at this point, wasn't he like part of Lex Luthor's cabinet?
He was. He's Secretary of Education.
Which I think was really cool.
Yeah.
If you key off something like that.
See, and that's my question. If you're developing Greg Black Lightning, do you do him as a social worker? Do you do him as a school teacher? And I'm thinking inner city school teacher who is also something of a social worker.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I would go.
It might be interesting to even go kind of a – give him something of a focus. Like, what if his goal was to find some of the metahumans that were springing around but who were not kind of in we're confused kids who are not in places of privilege.
Right.
Basically, he's trying to help street kids who are, like, getting metahuman powers, guide them a little bit. That can sort of be his focus, keep them from falling into being recruited by gangs, by bigger bad guys like Grodd and stuff like that.
Yep.
It'd be kind of interesting if that was – if they went that focus, you know, he could kind of be scouting for it while he's doing his teacher thing.
That would be cool.
Could you also give him his daughter that he had?
I wouldn't
either, because it changes things quite a bit, yeah. I think.
I do think it's possible.
But it
could
be interesting.
You could do a Family Guy show sort of thing, but I kind of like him a little bit younger and maybe not family.
That's kind of what I was thinking too, yeah.
I think it'd just be interesting to have something different than we've seen. I mean, on television, all the other heroes are sort of that same. Give him maybe a kid would be interesting.
Yeah, I just think that probably they're probably going to stick with the young. If it's CW,
yeah, if it's CW,
they're going to stick with the young.
It's also one of those things where, to some degree, if you've got a family, you start looking especially reckless when you're going out fighting super crime.
You also,
I know it's part of the. That's kind of just part of the job thing. But, I don't know. You got a kid.
There's also, and this is maybe not an argument to be bothered with, but the creator of the character, Tony Isabella, hated the hand daughters.
Oh, really?
He hated that he sort of had estranged daughters. He basically did not like the idea that this guy had sort of abandoned his daughters and not come into their own later in life. It's a thing he didn't want to do.
Right. Isabella's, when he created this character, does he kind of go down as like the DC's first black superhero?
I believe that's correct. I'm not sure.
He's not first. Black Panther was first, right?
Black Panther is Marvel.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, but that's just
not the first black character.
He had to have been created in the 60s. I don't know when Black Lightning came around.
I don't either.
Because, John Stewart was also in the late 60s.
Yeah, and I don't know if he was before or after.
But in any case, one of the very early ones for DC, and sort of an early star type, I know, if I'm not mistaken, he was kind of meant to be a counterpoint to the usual black character of the era, which was going to be like a real urban character.
Streetwise hustler.
Streetwise, yeah. This guy was kind of if anything, kind of like conservative, middle or upper middle class kind of guy.
Yeah.
I don't particularly care too much about where on that spectrum they place him for the show. He's always kind of like a man of honor. But I can understand how Isabella might not have wanted him. He wanted him to be the stable guy.
Yeah.
And him having like screwed up with his kids to some degree was no bueno to him.
Yeah, I get it.
But you know what? This is also these are also corporate characters, mm-hmm. and they are ever evolving. And you even write authorial intent does not necessarily mean crap.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to comics for the week. We were talking about comics the week of September 7th, and it is indie week this week.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
There was I didn't get through a ton of stuff, but what I did, I was surprised at how many. I was like, oh, that was awesome. Oh, that was good.
I got like a half dozen or more like independent books that I thought were easily pick worthy.
Yep.
The one of the ones I landed on is Knights Dominion by Ted Nafe, who did
Polly and the Pirates.
Polly the Pirates, Princess Ugg, and Courtney Crumrin.
Courtney Crumrin.
Just because we, we're coming from an industry where they use the word, different versions of the word knight all the time. That's knight, N-I-G-H-T,
yes.
Not K-N-I-G-H-T. Not that it particularly matters.
No, it kind of does, because knight, not only is it referring to, you know, nighttime dealings and that kind of thing, one of the lead characters' name is knight, and knight is a legendary thief. This is a, it takes place in sort of a fantasy world. It is best described as sort of a mix between Dungeons and Dragons and maybe a little Batman.
Yeah, just towards the end, and you know, it's not quite as swashbuckling as like D&D. It's got a little bit more of grittiness.
Yeah,
and if anybody ever read, Randy, did you ever read like the Thieves World stuff that George R. R. Martin oversaw way back in the day, even before Wild Cards?
Was that George R. R. Martin? I don't think it was.
I'm gonna go.
I
out
think
on
it was Robert. I believe it was Robert Asprin.
No, he did that other thing.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Robert Asprin and Robert
Asprin. All right, well, I'm just going to dig myself into a hole and say it was George R. R. Martin.
Fair.
Or at least he was a contributor to it.
I'm just saying, Dave's usually right.
All right, well, someone right now is listening to this podcast and yelling at one or both of us.
All right, well, the thing is, I feel like Randy could be right about this.
I'm pretty sure it's not George R. R. Martin. So let's go a third option that we're sure it's not. Isaac Asimov's Thieves' World.
Yes.
Proceed.
Anyway, for those who didn't read it, it was an anthology set in a city and followed the sort of darker underbelly of the city and the various characters moving in and out.
Yeah.
Fences, jewel thieves, all kinds of people in that dark underworld. This is not quite that grim and gritty.
No.
But it has a little bit of that edge, don't you think, Randy?
Just absolutely, yeah.
A bit more than, say, D&D comic would.
Yeah. This is kind of what I wanted out of a D&D comic, honestly.
Yeah.
I love what Pathfinder's doing, and I love what the D&D comics, but this is
more sophisticated characters.
Yeah. It's a group. They meet in a tavern because they've been called by someone who, and it's a bard who calls them together, I believe.
It is.
And so you've got like a magus and a cleric and an asp, which is clearly a deadly assassin. And then they recruit the barmaid who has a secret. And you'll figure that secret out pretty quickly. I had figured it out before they revealed it, but gets into the politics of sort of the Thieves Guild, and then you meet this crusader who seems to be sort of like a Batman of a D&D world, which is a neat idea. And they're getting together for sort of a big heist. And in throughout that, you get to meet all these characters. You get this beautiful artwork by Nafe. It's got a really nice color palette.
I mean, I think most people know Ted Nafe from Courtney Crumrin.
Yeah.
And
we mentioned everything he's done.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. He's always got slightly gothic sensibilities,
yeah.
Kind of, you know, but this is, this has some pretty, for him, it's a little bit more sophisticated, I would say, than his kind of all ages stuff he's done in the past.
I love the colors on this that he does.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
He does some really, especially when it's like twilight and there's like this red and blue and, the thief is like flying over the city and she meets up with, the sort of the hawk guy who is her, I can't tell if he's mentor or nemesis or what, but it's really, really good.
Yep, that reminds me of some of the quality coloring on like Hellboy and stuff like that. I mean, it's not to say that it exactly resembles it, but it's that same craft that's sort of very atmospheric coloring.
But this is a book, I was looking forward to this. I didn't read all of Princess Ugg, and I didn't read the last thing Nafe did all the way through. But I've been looking forward to this, and it did not disappoint. I was really happy with it. I would say if you are interested in sort of fantasy comics at all, this was definitely worth a look. Dave, what is your pick?
My pick is from Aftershock Comics is Alters, number one. It's an indie superhero book that to cut to the chase, to the high concept of it, which I had forgotten going in, and which I guess I was glad I'd forgotten, so maybe I shouldn't say what it is, but
you
it's
kind of have to.
It's part of the part and parcel of it is a trans character who's she's a teenage it's a boy who is recognizes that he's a girl and has even in secret begun like hormone treatments,
yeah.
I think,
yeah.
Unbeknownst to his parents. Paul Jenkins writes this, and I want to say right away, I am not usually a big fan of Jenkins, who's best known for, what, Wolverine's Origin?
I alternately love and hate Paul Jenkins.
Right. He did Origin, though, right?
He did Origin,
but he also did the Inhumans thing.
Inhumans, Sentry, things that people have liked, although I haven't liked all of them.
He did that Spider-Man run that we all love.
He did a really good Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man run that had, like, a story in it that I think is one of, like, the like a five-star gold standard
classic Spider-Man story.
But he also was responsible for, what is that?
Sentry of the Return. Yeah.
And also the Civil War.
Yeah.
What was it? The side book.
Frontline,
which
he's written some stuff we outright hate.
Yeah, I just want to get it out of the way. This is not crap-ass Paul Jenkins. This is cool-ass Paul
Jenkins. This is good Paul Jenkins, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I like is the sort of the setting of it. It is a world where what they call their superpowered peoples or people are called alters.
Yep.
And there's an interesting mix in here between realism and something of the classic superhero thing with costumes and things like that,
sure.
And you know, code names and all that. So when this new character, this new heroine first appears, there's a sequence where they attempt to recruit her. What's the name of the team, Randy?
It's Octavia is like the super genius head of it. I don't know if they have a name for the team.
Yeah, and they're kind of interesting. It almost looks like what you might get on like a TV show that was like, you know, kind of, I don't know, or almost like, not Overwatch, but the same way that Overwatch and Matrix and stuff like that are superheroes without being superheroes, a little bit more tech. That's a little bit what the vibe I get here. But people do have crazy superhero level powers.
Yep.
And these people are like almost on a timetable to quickly try and recruit this new person because they know that there's a really crazy, very powerful bad guy who is also looking to take in superheroes under
either recruit or kill. It seems like anyone new that manifests, he wants to recruit. And he's almost like, what if the Joker had Superman's powers?
Definitely like sociopathic and kind of, you know, that same egocentric thing that you get off Joker. But they are, they're like, we've maybe got 2-3 minutes before he's here.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a scary situation, but it's not dark. There is a little bit of lightness going on here, and the characters are kind of cool. That's one of the things I liked is that it's not a super angsty comic. I also love the main character.
Yeah, and his family. I like all the supporting cast.
Yep, he's got an interesting family. He talks about being in three particularly awkward situations. He's the middle kid.
Yeah,
he's recognizing that he's a girl, and I forget what the other one was. But anyway, his family is actually interesting. He's likable. He's kind of got his dad is definitely kind of a bit of a bro dad, you know, and his older brother?
Older brother, yeah.
Is kind of that man's son. But you know what I thought was interesting is like none of it's played to that kind of ridiculous lengths or like, oh, that guy's the enemy.
Yeah.
They're family, you know, they get along and they kind of rib on each other and they don't realize that some of the stuff they're saying might not be the coolest thing for this kid to hear.
Yeah.
But it's not, I didn't feel that it was, you know, obvious and obnoxious or anything.
Yeah. No, it's really well done. It's nice. It's nice.
Anyway, so it's an origin issue.
You got to mention the art.
Oh, yeah. The art, let's see, I'm going to say is Layla Leyes?
Sure.
I don't know how you say her name.
And I think the colorist is Tamara Bonvillain, who has done Rat Queens and a bunch of other. She's a really great colorist.
And it's beautiful artwork. It's, you know what it reminded me of? I was thinking of sort of like Ryan Otley on Invincible.
Yeah.
Is that the guy who took over for the long haul?
Yes, Corey Walker
did the first.
Yeah.
But in the same ballpark as both of those. And that'll maybe if you're trying to picture the sort of lightness of it in a story that otherwise has some dark moments of realism, but not not super dark.
Nobody punches through anybody.
Not
Invincible.
It's really gorgeous and it has a sort of pop look to it. At the same time, the characters are really well realized. I think that building this empathy around what's going to be sort of a breakout trans character, hopefully, getting an artist who can convey subtle facial expressions was an important thing, and she really pulls it off.
She reminds me a lot of some of the characters, some of the artists that Jay Faerber found when he was doing like Noble Causes and
Ezra, or you know,
yeah. And that was what I was thinking. Not Noble Causes. Dynamo 5. One of those people who is going to finish this and get snapped up immediately by DC or Marvel.
Yes. But I hope she'll stick around with this book because it's also seems like it could be an awesome place to make a name. One last thing I wanted to mention as I'm flipping through this, there's some good little bits of humor in it too. Yeah. It is not super, you know, and also with something like this, you worry about it. It's like, it's going to feel like a cause book.
Yeah.
I feel like this is more like Ms. Marvel when it hit Kamala Khan, in the sense that it's first and foremost about a teenage superhero who just has some interesting background stuff going on.
By the way, it's nice to see that I think Dave, you and I, and I don't know if Nick, you're the same boat as this, but we always felt like, don't do any superheroes. Like, Marvel and DC have superheroes pretty locked down.
They got it locked down. Yeah.
And it's nice to see that we're seeing some exceptions. Like, this book reminds me somewhat of Faith.
Right.
Like, it is a different take on superheroes. This is a book that Marvel or DC, maybe they could do, but they're not likely to do. And if they did, they wouldn't do it this way.
Yep.
So it's kind of nice to see, hey, there is a niche for superheroes outside of Marvel and DC, and you guys are finding it.
Yep. And I also, to some degree, when people take the blend of realism or kind of high adventure, they try and find different blends of that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times in indie books, they tend to go darker, like, you know, we're going to go with a really edgy one.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, well, I've gotten a little bit bored with the different blends I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why this one particularly clicked.
Yeah.
It's not super wildly different. It's just, it is finding its own sort of equilibrium that's a little bit between realism and, you know, this kind of almost like TV sci-fi-ish kind of vibe to it. But it is something different from Marvel and DC, and I kind of like that they get to pick and choose the stuff that they like from what Marvel and DC have done over the decades.
Yeah, it's a good concept, well executed.
Yep. All right, Nick,
I'm going to talk about a book where people do get punched.
Someone does punch through somebody.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Several times.
We see intestines.
But I know this is the book Skyborn, which is Frank Cho's new book.
By the way, Skyborn.
Yes.
Spelled Bourne.
Correct.
That's not a mistake, right? That's a Bourne Legacy riff. Don't you think?
I mean, it's possible, but there's also sort of a link to some like myths and legends in the fact that this book is all about the three children of Lazarus.
Okay.
I don't know my myths and legends all that well.
I thought the Bourne, because it is sort of spy-y and adventure-y, and I thought maybe it had like a Bourne Legacy.
I think it was probably just playing more off the word Bourne.
Probably so.
They spelled it wrong. Or is it because it's British?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably because it's British.
Because
it all focuses on the children of Lazarus. That they have blessed with superhuman strength, impenetrable skin, and immortality.
You know, it's
this
funny,
is
Nick,
their story.
I didn't catch that, because that's in the opening.
It is in their opening thing.
That's not in the comic. It's just in, like,
it's in the opening thing, which is actually important that you read that and know that.
I did not catch that
because
at all.
I've had a few comics with that lately that the first issue will have a little bit of intro on their title page, and it's usually not vital, but it's sometimes more important.
I mean,
than
I don't
others.
Think it's, like, insanely vital to this, because this is really just an action-adventure book focusing on a woman who works for a society that likes relics.
Yeah.
And she goes and picks them up. In this instance, it is a relic that everyone should know, just from myths. And,
When you say that society who likes them, do you mean that there's some super secret organization?
They're gathering them up, yeah.
Is it for war, or do they say
it? We don't know.
It seems kind of spy-y.
Yeah, it's very spy-y, but
Real quick, are they good guys or bad guys?
We don't know.
Don't know.
Got it.
They could be gray area. Who knows?
I got a vibe of this that reminded me of like Tomb Raider a little bit.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that.
It's Tomb Raider meets, I mean, like you said, Bourne Legacy meets Excalibur.
Meets superheroes.
It's fun, though. I think Frank Cho has sort of created a character that
He's always got kind of an energetic vibe to his comics.
But a lot of times I feel like Cheesecake is a big factor for him.
Yeah.
Here it's not. It's sort of just focused on the action adventure side of things,
right.
And well, it is.
You know, it actually looks a little
bloody.
Warren Ellis-ish as I'm watching this. She's not dressed in like a crazy costume. She's got like jeans and a jacket.
Plain clothes, yeah.
Yeah, it does have some Warren Ellis elements. I also think it has some Mark Millar elements.
Yeah, I can see that.
But there's some cool stuff. There's great action sequences.
Yeah, I was going to say the action is really good.
Yeah, I think Frank Cho has always been good at that. But yeah, he gets to going to have pretty cool.
I see somebody being shot at, and the bullets are bending around them, sort of like like I've seen in movie type concepts or Matrixy stuff.
Yeah, there's a reason for it. I'm not going to give that reason away, but no, I think I don't want to spoil too much, and I think it's just a fun first issue. Like I said, I'm not a huge super fan of Frank Cho, but over the years I've liked his what. He did that Shannon the She-Devil miniseries for Marvel that I really enjoyed. But this was fun. I will
go so far as to say I'm not a fan of Frank Cho, and I liked this quite a bit.
Yeah.
What is your backup pick, Nick?
My backup pick, and this time I will go with just straight up superheroes, and this is first issue of Supergirl. And I like what they're doing here because they're basically reinventing the character in a lot of ways. Taking elements from the show that's worked.
What elements from the show are in there?
I mean, they've got her parents.
Her sister?
Her sister hasn't been shown, but I know she's there.
Okay.
But they also do sort of this kind of All-Star Superman style of opening stories, just in one page telling her background and history.
That looks like a direct homage
to All-Star Superman. Yeah, it's a direct homage to All-Star Superman.
Okay.
And it's cool. I love the art in here. The art is by, where am I? Oh, Brian Ching, is that right?
I'm going to say that there is a touch of Umberto Ramos to that.
Very much so. But no, and yeah, it's Brian Ching, yeah, and written by Steve Orlando. But no, they basically take elements from the show. They've actually brought elements of like Amazing Spider-Man in there too, because they've made her sort of a teenager going to high school, so she's kind of going to have that element where she's...
That's interesting to take stuff from the show, but not go with, like, the Catco or stuff.
That's what I was thinking. It's interesting that she's a teenager and not, like, a 20-something.
Right. But, I mean, I guess we saw that they, with the Green Arrow stuff, comics recently, they actually pulled back from the show as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because you're putting her in a position where she is, like, super smart, super intelligent over the fact of kind of working with what she, the tools, which are kind of almost... simple and not anything like she had on Krypton.
Oh, right.
She just leaps and bounds above everybody.
Right, right. You're talking about, like, the school lessons.
Yeah, and so she's sort of trying to wrap her heads around that while also trying to be Supergirl. Her handler is actually Chase from the DEO.
That's pretty cool.
She runs the DEO now instead of Mr. Bones.
Oh, that's kind of too bad.
That's a little too bad, but I love that they're using Cameron Chase anyways.
Yeah, so, me too.
There's a great action sequence in here. Cat Grant makes an appearance, so she's definitely going to be a part of the...
Okay.
I like her parents, who are not exactly like the mother and father figure that they are in the show.
Yeah.
They're also agents, sort of her handlers in a lot of ways. But...
So they are working for the DEO?
Yeah, they're definitely DEO.
And in the show, what, like, her dad was blackmailed into sort of joining the DEO was presumed dead, although we now know what it was.
Probably not.
We know what it was. But, yeah. No, I think it's just a really fun start with fantastic art and some cool backup stories. And the Stinger is fantastic. And there's a cool relationship with Superman as well.
Does it have hot Jimmy Olsen? James Olsen?
No, yeah, there is no hot James Olsen.
Sorry, no sexy man, James Olsen, I'm out.
I'm just saying, it was probably one of my favorite DC books so far. So.
Interesting. All right. I'll have to check it out. Did they have a Rebirth special for this one? I think they did.
They did, and I thought it was solid, but...
You think the first issue is more notable?
First issue is more notable.
Special? And it's not one of those where you had to have read the Rebirth special.
You could just jump in. There are things in here. There's a reason why Supergirl's working for the DEO that was put into the Rebirth special, so... Mm-hmm.
Okay, so worth picking up.
Yeah, worth picking up.
This seems to be maybe where it hits its stride.
Dave, right. What is your alt pick?
My alt pick is the second issue of Ed Brubaker's sort of supernatural revenge comic, Kill or Be Killed, which I really liked the first issue, as dark as it was.
Yep.
And I have to say, when I saw this on the shelf today, I was like, oh, I do kind of want to see what happens next, but I wasn't sure I was really, like, in the mood for it. And then just right away on the first page, I was wrapped back up in it again. Now, this lead character who, was he a college student?
Yeah.
He's college age. This story begins sort of in media res. He, for reasons witnessed in the first one, has to kill a person a week?
I think it might be a month.
And I actually forgot the specifics of why. There's this demon that's, like, tracking him. It's almost like a a kind of a spin on the what's that manga, Death Note?
Yeah.
Well, basically, in the first issue, doesn't he like try to kill himself, and there, and he, and this entity saves him?
Yeah, and now he owes it,
and he basically is like, "I saved you. You owe me. This is what you have to do."
Right. And so this one begins with him walking up on this snowy street behind a guy, and he's got a pistol, and he's about to kill the dude, and then he's like, the story backtracks to like where, how it got to this point.
Yeah.
And how it got there is a really interesting, it flashes back to his childhood, it also has him trying to get into the logistics of the thing, like, how does he get a gun?
Yeah.
How does he get a gun where he's not going to get caught with it?
Yeah.
You know, is how, you know, so the CSI doesn't track him down and end this mission right away, because he is proceeding with it at the moment. I can't remember why is he so compelled to do it? Is he just afraid of, like,
because if he doesn't, he starts dying.
But yeah. Like, he was going to kill himself.
No, there's something more to that, and I forget the first issue exactly, but there's a reason why it's like he'll go to hell or something like
right,
that.
Right, like, yeah. It's bad.
It's bad.
Well, I think he tried to kill himself in the last possible, last second.
He really didn't want to.
He realized he didn't want to.
Yeah.
Right, right. So there's an interesting thing. He's, like, meeting with a guy who's, like, a drug dealer.
Yep.
And he's like, hey, can you get me a gun? And the guy is sort of, it's almost like, I'm just a drug dealer. I don't get into that kind of stuff. I'm not like a, you know, murderer. And, but he flashes, we get a flashback to a sequence when he was a kid, which has some interesting stuff about his dad, who kind of did pulp illustrations that were sort of like naughty sci-fi fantasy magazines.
Yep.
Of like the 70s. And he remembers an incident with one of his friends, and
I don't think you should give too much away, by the way.
Yeah, no, I don't want to say too much other than it spikes an idea in his head about a possible person to track down. And it's really interesting. It's unnerving.
The time jumps and the sort of strong character work, this reminds me of, like, it's like Chuck Palahniuk's Death Wish. It's like,
yeah.
Fight Club-esque. In the sort of the jumping around in time and yet being perfectly clear at the same time.
Right. One thing I noticed with this is that there was, like, although I forgot a little bit of the specifics about, you know, what compelled this mission in him, it was Brubaker often is, and especially here where it's focused on a single character, it's extremely clear storytelling.
Yeah.
And I really like that about it, as it allows you to just kind of, like, enjoy these scenes happening, and there's not some. I honestly get frustrated sometimes with comics that they pull in the first issue, and there's like multiple overlapping narrative captions, and I got to go and try and puzzle out a bunch of crap.
Yep.
And I'm like, I would sometimes just like a really well told dialogue scene, a great character scene.
Yep.
I don't want to have to puzzle box it all the time.
Brubaker does that kind of thing really well.
Also, beautiful artwork by Sean Phillips.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's got to be like the most detailed work he's done. It's honestly, at this point, it's reminding me a little bit of who kicked off Steve Epting.
Yeah.
Steve Epting's work with Brubaker. And Sean Phillips traditionally was kind of coming from a school that was kind of a little bit more Alex Toth, kind of like, you know, heavier blocked in shadows and stuff. And he still has that.
Is this still Elizabeth Breitweiser doing colors?
I believe it is.
So let's take a look.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is the team that did Fatale and The Fade Out. They've been together. I think I've read literally everything Brubaker has done in comics, and I own 90% of it. Like, I love this team.
We can go back as far as Accidental Death.
Yep, got
there
that.
At Shanower.
Yep, got
right,
that.
Just checking.
They should put that back in print, by the way. That was a great book.
Was The Fall one of his first?
Yep, The Fall with Jason Lutz. Got that too.
Oh man, I forgot it was Jason Lutz.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd like to see that back in print again.
I would too. Both of those should be back in print. They're both great books.
But yeah, do you see what I mean, Randy, though?
Oh,
it's
yeah,
more
totally.
Of an illustrator style. It's like it's tightening up.
Yeah.
And but not falling into that Greg Land over photo reference place.
And I agree.
He gets to stretch his range, because I think like the noir picture that his like father drew.
Yeah, yeah.
Is definitely
sort of
a different
painty
style.
Looking, yeah.
Oh yeah, like it is full on. I mean, this looks like the sci-fi books of the 70s that were and stuff that would have somewhat lurid covers. Well, I believe this is actually meant to be like magazines that were kind of like pulp science fiction anthologies.
They are definitely leaning at heavy metal. Like, he's talking about heavy metal.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
And Brubaker does that a lot. He did the criminal story that was Archie. And he always does things where it's like anyone reading will recognize the pop cultural touchstone, but he's not saying it wasn't heavy metal. It's like a magazine that anyone knows was heavy metal, basically.
What's interesting is that this is like a supernatural, like, kind of noir comic. You know, it's noir in that, literally in that sense of, you know, being that kind of inescapable situation, yeah. And this feeling of violence weighing down on it, and also him not being sure that he should be killing people,
right?
Let alone making those choices, you right. know,
of, or if he's just gone schizophrenic,
right. But at the same time, there's also some deep character stuff. There's just interesting stuff, like what it would be like to be the son of a dad who did these kind of lurid, kind of like borderline porny illustrations.
Yep.
It's an interesting slice of kind of like an era and of a kind of unusual childhood. So I'm loving the series. I need to go back and read his Hollywood noir one?
Fade Out.
I need to go back and reread Fade Out because I wasn't quite in the mood for that, but I think this kind of put me in that Brubakery mood.
Love the Fade Out. I love Fatal. Fade Out is coming out in a deluxe hardcover that'll have the whole story fairly soon, so
nice.
Looking forward to that. By the way, Killer Be Killed number one, we're currently out of, but I believe the second printing will be in next week or the week after.
Nice. Randy, you want to hit us up with your second pick?
My alt pick is a Vertigo book that is sort of a harkening back to the classic 90s Vertigo to some extent. Or maybe early 2000s. This is Ever After from the pages of Fables, number one. It is written by a couple of Austin guys, Dave Justice and Matt Sturgis, and has art by Travis Moore, who I don't know off the top of my head, but who has this sort of the same type of work that Buckingham was doing on Fables.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I don't know if Buckingham is English, although that's a very English-sounding name.
He is.
But there is a certain, like, English illustrator's quality to
yeah.
it. And it's
like Chris Weston
exactly,
and those guys.
Exactly, all those
yeah.
early guys from Hellblazer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's really beautifully illustrated. But just jump back for a second. This is a follow-up to Fables.
It is. And here's the thing. I stopped reading Fables around issue 100 or so.
Right. Went to what, 150?
Something like that. And so I wasn't sure if I'd be lost, and I'm not. Because what this is basically another 90s staple. It's like Queen and Country meets Fables.
Yeah.
It is a team of three.
I don't know if Queen and Country is a super well-known touchstone outside of our...
It's not. It's about British... It's British spies. It's a team of three operatives, all Fables.
Yep.
Bo Peep... Hansel, the insane witch hunter, and a character named Connor Wolf, who those of you who read Fables all the way through will probably be able to guess his parentage. He's a great character. He's sort of he's like the college age adventurer who gets recruited. They are run by, like, they call him like D-Ops, you know.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah.
like it is.
That's
and,
British spy style.
And it's, if you like, say, Kingsman, it's got a little bit of that, the Secret Service. And basically they are this Fables team that is out. After the end of Fables, I gather that basically sort of the mystical became sort of known in the real world. And these guys are a secret agent team that goes out and deal with it. So it opens with them dealing with a bunch of zombies as they're tracking down a Fable problem that they will wind up dealing with. There's a twist to that, but I won't reveal it.
I didn't read the whole issue yet, Randy, but... I think he was talking about, it seems like the modern world is creating its own new myths
yes.
and fables. So it's almost like because zombies are in the pop culture, they are now, can like, you know, become materialized as fables.
That's possibly implied. There are a reason there are zombies in this book.
Okay, interesting. I didn't get all the way to it.
At any rate, there's also sort of a sense of fun beyond the sort of spy stuff and then the action stuff. There's a pretty fun moment between the lead guy and the head of D-Ops. And Connor, where he's talking about there's a nice touching scene between Connor and his parents, and he's telling Connor as he recruits him, he says, look, you should emphasize the shadow players, which they're called, are an intelligence gatherer organization. The wet work, the seduction, the games of baccarat, and the souped up Aston Martins, whatever romantic notions of spy life you've gathered from films or pulp novels, you'd do well to abandon them right now. They go on, they do the goodbyes, and as his parents are flying away in their convertible, because you do that kind of thing in Fables, he says, I might add that all my admonitions for about no Aston Martins were for their sake. As well, of course. Of course we have Aston Martins.
Yeah.
And there's some fun stuff in there. This was a really entertaining book.
It's tapping into like the spy heisty kind of thing. Is there any Ocean's 11 to it, Randy?
No. No. This is definitely more.
It's not the. It's basically Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
or,
it's more Mission Impossible.
There you go.
Yeah. It's a team of three operatives with powers dealing with sort of enemies with powers and sort of keeping those under wraps. I wasn't sure what to expect. I really dug this. And like I say, I had not read Fables. If you finish Fables and you're like, oh, I want more, this is more in that world. If you went off Fables, but you had like the idea of sort of a spy team with some fantasy elements, this is also for you. I was very pleased with it. Also on my list this week, and man, a lot of these books could have made my pick list. Eclipse number 1, new from Top Cow, is by some new names to me. Writer Zach Kaplan and artist Giovanni Timpano is about a world where there was a solar flare that basically turned the sun deadly. So if you're out in the sunlight, you die. You burn to death. So everyone has moved underground and into sort of enclosed areas, and they only come out at night.
I wish I'd gotten around to reading this because I really like the premise.
Well, that's the basic premise, and then the premise of the story is that someone is murdering people using sunlight.
Interesting.
And so it's getting into sort of the political realm of who are the people running this sort of post-apocalyptic world. It's really, really good, and I highly recommend it. It gives me a little bit of that vibe of what I got out of The Beauty, where they're sort of exploring an alternate world in through sort of crime aspects. There's another one, The Great Divide, which is a Dynamite book. This one we only have a couple of, so we may sell out quickly, but hopefully we'll get it back in. But it is another great concept where basically something happened where humanity cannot touch each other. If you touch someone else, you will immediately like gain their memories, and then you will die as blood comes out of all your orifices. So basically, it is a post-apocalyptic world where people can't reproduce because they can't touch.
Right.
So it's like riding out the clock at the end of the world, and it's a sort of scavenger making his way through that world. There's also an element of sort of they trade the currency they trade is sort of dirty magazines and sex toys because no one can touch each other. There's a constant sexual frustration. Really interesting concept, well executed. Then I got my Marvel stuff. Moon Knight number 6 starts a new story arc where I don't honestly know what's happening in this book. They still haven't told me if it's all in Mark Spector's head or not, but I'm still very intrigued to find out what's going on. It's got really nice art by James Stokoe, Francisco Frigavia, and Wilfredo Torres. Doctor Strange starts the post-empirical Destruction of Magic? Whatever that story was called. Last Days of Magic, where Doctor Strange has sort of been reset to ground zero and is having to relearn all his magic, and also looks a little like Benedict Cumberbatch now.
That's a great issue. Guest artist by Kevin Nolan, who does a fantastic
job. That guy's been around forever, but doesn't do a ton of feature stories, so it's cool.
Silk number 12 continues the story of Cindy Moon with her two friends looking for her parents. It's really fun. It's got beautiful art by Tana Ford, and it's got a fantasy element to it, which I was not expecting Silk to do, but which I'm really liking. I like the direction they've gone after.
You should say where they're investigating, because I think that's half the fun.
No, I don't want to.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it is on the cover, right?
Yeah, I mean,
it's the negative zone.
Which is such a cool concept.
Yeah. All New, All Different Avengers number 14 is co-written by Jeremy Whitley, who is going to be writing the All New Wasp series, and this is a spotlight on that new teenage Russian Wasp, who is Hank Pym's daughter, who's never met Hank Pym, because Hank Pym became an Ultron before she met him.
That's true.
Daredevil number 11 continues the story of Daredevil investigating a sort of strange serial killer who painted a mural with 112 different victims' blood, and this story is all about a sort of gallery owner who's trying to ghoulishly display this, and the politics of that, and that brings in Matt on his legal side, while on the Daredevil side, this artist is going about creating more macabre tableaus. It reminds me a little bit of what I liked about Hannibal, the show.
Yeah. Interesting.
And it's really, really good and dark and interesting.
That cover's intense.
Yeah. And then Kim and Kim number 2, which was Space Bounty Hunters. I loved the first issue, and the second issue is fun. And then The Beauty, number 10, which continues exploring the world of The Beauty through different guest artists. This time, Brett Weldell is the artist, and I haven't had a chance to read this yet, but the last few I've really enjoyed. Also in graphic novels, the latest Pathfinder graphic novel, which I always enjoy those, and the first Star Wars hardcover, which is the first 12 issues.
So the equivalent of the first few trades.
Yep. Dave, what else you got?
Let's see. Just wanted to quick mention third issue of the Flintstones hit. I have not had a chance to read this yet, but it does appear that they are visited by extraterrestrials in this one,
including the Great Gazoo. Which I assume
means the Great Gazoo. Nick, you flipped through it. Did it definitely have the Great Gazoo?
Yes,
I don't want to promise it and it's not there for me.
It's there.
Never disappoint with the Great Gazoo. People will riot.
It's just as good as the other issues have been, and the art by Steve Pugh is fantastic.
By the way, throwing in Great Gazoo on your issue three of your Flintstones, that's just confidence. That's confidence right there.
Well, you know, since they're really running with the satire of it,
yeah.
Aliens visiting and observing the culture from afar, it's a really ample opportunity.
Sure.
Also have not read yet, but Cyborg number one from the Rebirth line, or that is to say, the Cyborg Rebirth special.
Nick, you read that, right?
I did, and it actually is a really good intro into the character that is Cyborg. It catches you up on sort of his history, but in a way that is a little more interesting than just info dumping all the specs. It's basically him in an action sequence taking on sort of this computer virus that is trying to burrow its way into Star Labs, and specifically Victor Stone's father's lab.
Okay.
So it's an interesting concept. I think this writer has a good handle on the character, so, and I really enjoyed the art, too, so I thought it was a fun issue.
I'm curious, does he have any special focus? Does he, protecting a certain city, dealing with techno crimes, working with Star Labs?
Star Labs, I think, for the most part, and sort of, I think a lot of his biology and physiology is still being explored and not really understood because I think it's in New 52 his body was bonded with apocalyptic technology.
Yeah.
They don't quite get it. They don't know if this is really Victor Stone or if it's just a copy who thinks he's Victor Stone. So it's an interesting concept, sort of like the Swamp Thing problem.
Alan Moore reinvented it as a sentient plant that thought it was a dude.
Right.
I also wanted to just quick mention a weird book that came out this week called X-Files Origins. Is this a one-shot? Or
it's a miniseries.
I don't know if all the issues will be like this, but it's actually a flip book where half of it is Mulder and half of it is Scully, and this is them as kids, 12 or something like that.
Do they
like
meet
that
in the middle?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I was sort of hoping that this would be a crazy thing where it's they have X-Files adventures in high school
and
stuff like
that.
You
basically wanted the Hardy Boys version.
I wanted Skinner to be the principal or something like that, and the smoking man to be a creepy janitor. I don't know.
That's never going to happen.
But this is, in fact, within continuity and more of an exploration of their characters as they were kind of becoming who they were in their as kids. And it actually looked pretty well done.
It's Jody Hauser writing.
Jody
Hauser does Faith.
Oh, well, there you go. That's why it looked good when I flipped to it, in spite of it not being set in high school with Skinner as principal.
By the way, the smoking man should be the vice principal who secretly represents the school board.
I think you're right. And by the way, I forgot, Simpsons has given us a Principal Skinner.
Yes.
So this is that's just an obvious thing.
Yep.
Then you'd have a bunch of clones of Mulder's sister.
He'd be running secret missions. He'd be getting called to the principal's office, but in fact going on secret missions for
him.
Damn it, Dave, I want to read that book.
All right, but I'm just saying, this actually looks good for US Files people
then
out there.
Then his, best friend turned enemy Krychek.
Yes.
And the lone gunman or the computer club.
Oh, yep. that's...
And they'd be worried that, some students might have been replaced,
Right.
He'd be, trying to find a way to get a little test, a hair sample to see if it has alien DNA mixed with it.
I'm just going to ask a question. Who would be the lunch lady? Or the lunch person?
The fluke man.
Yes. Do you remember the episode Mama? The lunch lady's under the floorboards.
Oh, that's messed up.
All right, that's all I got to report on. Nikki, any others?
Yeah, I've got a few other ones. I've got Invincible Iron Man 13, which, I've been interested in checking in on this book every once in a while, and this is sort of fallout from Civil War II. It's Tony dealing with the loss of his best friend while also dealing with Victor Von Doom, who seems to be an annoying presence in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Annoying, hey, you want to go hang out?
Kind of like the Angel from It's a Wonderful Life. He's trying to help Tony, but in kind of annoying ways.
Okay.
Then there's the sixth issue of Batman, which is sort of a fallout of the first five issues and sort of the Gotham and Gotham Girl story.
Mm-hmm.
Guest artist by Ivan Reis, so it's gorgeous.
Oh, nice.
We were flipping through this earlier, Nick, and we were like, I like Ivan Reis, but this is some of the best work I've seen from him. I think
it is.
Whoever was inking it particularly kind of meshed with him.
But there's also, it's sort of just an interesting issue because it's all about sort of dealing with loss and grief, mm-hmm. and sort of Batman's connection to this new character, mm-hmm. and his desire to help her, but not really knowing how in some ways. And it also has a few villains that I was excited to see. Weirdly, Kite Man does make an appearance, and I thought used well. Then there is the sixth issue of Superman.
I feel like Kite Man is actually overplayed. I just wish he'd stop showing up in
every book. Right, why is Kite Man in every book?
Did he show up in Gotham, like the actual show Gotham? Yeah, I feel like he'd be perfect
for Yeah, that's like would. That's his time to shine.
Yep.
He'd be like some horrible serial killer who has like bladed kites.
Sure, he would be like the ultimate villain in that.
Yes.
Yep. Like I said, the sixth issue of Superman, which is the finale to the first story arc of Tomasi and Gleason's work, and I thought it was very satisfying. It had one of those endings that I was wanted. It was, but also had a lot of cool action, and Patrick Gleason's artwork is gorgeous. And then I've got fourth issue of Nightwing, which has just been fun. And then, did we mention Glitter Bomb?
We did not.
So this is a fun little horror comic that Jim Zub, who wrote Skull Kickers and the new D&D, I forget what, it's the vampire one, it's the Strahd, but I can't remember what
it's actually. Yeah, he's been doing Legends of Baldur's Gate.
Legends of Baldur's Gate.
He also does Wayward.
Yeah, but this is sort of a horror comic about a woman who, a middle-aged woman who's having some problems with the movie industry and sort of getting a job because of what that.
She's aging out of Hollywood.
Yeah, she's aging out of Hollywood
way. Is she an actress?
She's an actress. Okay. And something very supernatural occurs to her, and problems start to arise.
It's on page 2, so I think he's not spoiling to say that she seems to be going through some kind of alien transformation where her face turns into a spaghetti face, and she stabs the people through the chest and kills them.
She stabs her own agent through the chin and kills him.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of goes from
there. Well, that's like, it has some kind of like creepy tentacle proboscis thing.
Yes,
like
she's like, alien-like.
Like the thing. This is not stab with a knife. This is like your tongue shoots out 20, like 10 feet and goes through somebody.
Dire Wraith style.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But no, I think Jim Zub actually does a really good job of with the characters in this. You see sort of her dealing with a younger actress who is kind of bitchy towards her. And, you know, there's just some
does
fun
scenes.
Does
she deal with it in the same way she deals with her other problems?
No, because she's normal at that point. Yeah. But it's sort of a progression. But really, really enjoyed it. I like Jim Zub, so I'm definitely going to continue to follow.
Yeah. That's it. That's all we have for this week. So we'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo-Jo.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.